You've been through pre-Cana, maybe you've even said, I do, and now what? Welcome to After Cana, a podcast for young couples looking to make it until death do they part. In each episode, we'll share sage wisdom and practical advice from couples who've been married for 20 plus years. My name is Gabby Quinlan, and today I have Annie and Adam Muller. Hey guys.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. So Annie and Adam, for our listeners, they actually did me and my husband's pre-Cana. So kind of fitting that they're here for after Cana now. And I just wanted to share with you all their wisdom that they shared with us. So I'm really excited. If you guys would just introduce yourselves a little bit and tell us your story, how you guys met and all that good stuff.
Okay, sure.
Go ahead.
So I'm Annie, and Adam and I met at the University of Dallas. I started there as I was 24. So I had waited to go to college, finally decided what I wanted to do, and ended up at UD as a Protestant. I very quickly converted, like within less than a year, and then met Adam probably that first year, just as friends. Like, we, you know, knew some of the same people. And then by my second year, we started hanging out a lot. And we basically, we were really good friends for a good two semesters. One semester in particular, we spent a lot of time together.
Annie was an undergraduate, an older undergraduate student. Yeah. And I was a grad student at the time. So we were the same age.
Nice.
But I was starting grad school and Annie was starting undergrad.
Right. And I really sort of quickly realized that I needed to make older friends. So, you know, I was in classes with all these 18 and 19 year olds. And so once I found out there was a grad school, I was like, okay, I need to find those people. I started like crashing grad school mixers and just like showing up. And
in fact, that was the very first time we met.
Oh, that's true.
Annie was standing next to the keg at one of my buddy's place.
That's your story.
And,
that's your
story. Remember meeting me?
I remember now, but for years when we told the story of how we met, I told the second time that we met. And then he finally gently corrected me several years later. Like, well, I actually met you at the Dupree's party. I was like, oh my gosh, that's right.
It's so funny what you each remember. We all have like different, I don't know, different things stick out. That's so funny.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how did you guys start dating and stuff?
So after about a semester, so Adam had a daughter that he had in high school. And he essentially had custody of her when we first met. And so when I met him, she came with him and I loved her. And I really, I say this to her all the time. Like, I fell in love with her first. So she was just such a great little girl. She was about five and Adam was working at the writing lab.
Yeah. And, there was a bunch of unstable circumstances going on, you know,
for her.
And so I had her move in with me full time. So, I was basically a single father and I was living with my two roommates.
He had two roommates and
they were amazing about it. Yeah.
So wow. I'll never forget. We were standing outside one of the buildings. We smoked back then. So, we were smoking. He just very casually says, well, you know, I'm going to have full custody of Rihanna and she's going to live with me. So I immediately was like, well, what are you going to do about childcare, you know, for your job? And he hadn't thought, you know, he hadn't figured that out yet.
It's like literally the day or two. Yeah.
So I just said, well, I'll take care of her. I don't work at night and that's no problem. I love her. She's great. You know, that'd be easy. So, and I didn't want to charge him or anything. I knew didn't have money. So I was just like, you can just come to my apartment. And so she did. So that's how it started. And then I would make dinner for them and they'd come out before and then he'd come to pick her up and she'd be asleep and we'd just talk and have a beer and, you know, talk about literature. So, yeah, so we really were just very good friends and we were not thinking about dating at the beginning.
So, but then how did we start dating?
Well, that, you tell that because I'd like to hear your version.
I mean, so we started to grow very close as friends, obviously. And I think at some point, it was over Christmas
break. It was Christmas break, yeah.
So I was going back home to visit my parents who had moved from Texas to Michigan. And so I was just going there for, you know, those 2 weeks between semesters or whatever. And but we stayed in touch over those 2 weeks, and I bought her a Christmas present. It was an original edition of John Keats's poetry.
We both did John Keats for a junior poet.
Yeah.
That's so sweet. Oh, I love it. That's a very huge gift.
Well, you say we kept in touch. He started writing me these very romantic emails and letters in those 2 weeks.
Like
they were romantic. They were. I still have them if we want.
No,
anyway,
I remember it, yeah.
It was kind of like all of a sudden something shifted. And I remember before you left, you were like, can we stay in touch while I'm in Michigan? And I was like, yeah, of course. So by that point I had realized like, I think I really like this guy and I don't want to just be his friend anymore. But then I was all insecure that, you know, I was like, maybe he didn't like me anyway. So that over that break, he emailed me like every single day. He sent me handwritten letters. He sent me a gift. And then I picked him up at the airport and it was like, we just were together. That was it.
Yeah. It was, I mean, it was very natural.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, so I don't know if we're getting too far off track, but
this is great.
Well, and I think, you know, we were going to talk about this, but you know, for me having Rihanna, you know, this 6-year-old girl, like there was no such thing as casual dating for me at that point, you know, like, yeah. I mean, ever since high school. So, you know, I didn't, you know, I'd always been cautious, you know, I wanted to be prudent and all
that. He was not a flirt. Let's just say that.
I didn't ever want to lead anyone on, you know, because there was just all this extra like pressure. Yeah. I wasn't going to flirt.
Yeah. No, know, not a flirt.
Until I was like,
serious,
and I didn't want to you know, because that's a big deal. I mean, it's you know, I didn't want to, you know, ruin our friendship, so so I don't know, I think probably during those 2 weeks it was helpful for me to, you know, just think and
have this
and
little
just remember how beautiful she was and
all that kind of stuff. Well, so then he got back and then Rihanna, his, you know, she went with us on our first date. We
oh, that's true.
Because, you know, we didn't have a sitter. I was the sitter. That's no, crazy. Anyway, so she went with us on our first few dates, but definitely our first one. And and then that was kind of that. So then we dated for about not 10 months, 10 or 11 months.
It was 11.
It was 11. Months. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
11. I was very anxious to get engaged. And then we got engaged. So we dated, you know, January to December we dated, and then we got engaged in December right before we broke for another semester, and then we got married in August. And it was, okay. I finished up my bachelor's in May, and Adam finished up his coursework and his comps for his PhD. So we were both sort of done, you know, done with campus and in May, and then we got married in August.
Wow, that's so awesome. Oh my gosh. That's really sweet. I love that it all started kind of like, I don't know, as friends, and even you babysitting Rihanna Annie. That's so sweet. Like, that's just such a wholesome way to start a relationship, I think.
Yeah.
I love that. So the first year of marriage, I know people are really scared of that, and I'm nearing the end of my first year of marriage.
Yeah.
And I can honestly say it's been really great, but I'm curious if you guys remember any particular things that stick out from your first year, any fights that really, you know, got your goat, or just the highs and lows of that.
Yeah.
I go first.
It
was fantastic. My wife's sitting right here. No, I'm just no, actually. two things about it come to mind. One of them is I remember at first dealing with Rihanna's, you know, just having this new family and the reality of, you know, Rihanna's mom and all this other stuff going on. That was very difficult for us, but it wasn't, it was difficult, but it wasn't
about us.
It wasn't really a burden on our relationship. We didn't fight about it. It was just mm-hmm. a lot to think through and to deal with, you know, as a young couple. So Annie was really great about that. The other thing I remember, and this is sillier for sure, is I remember having a second tube of toothpaste in the bathroom.
That happened pretty quick. That was a survival technique that he picked up on real fast.
Yeah. So
there were those little things like I'm messier than him. And I didn't know that I was driving him to the point of insanity with the way I was squeezing the toothpaste.
Just dumb things like that.
I'm the same as you, baby. I squeeze it.
But he's like meticulously rolling, you know. And I also am not good about like cleaning the top. So it's like gunky and gross. Like
there's two types of people. It's one or the other. I swear Matthew's the roller as well. So
So he realized, and then he's so sweet that he got an extra tube and he didn't even tell me. Like he didn't want to hurt my feelings.
I got it from the dentist.
And he's just like, oh, this will solve that problem.
And I was like, I can put this in the medicine cabinet. Because I always put my stuff away, you know. This is like a temperament and how you deal with stuff, you know. But
That actually is helpful. I do not put things away very well. And I wouldn't say I'm not dirty, but I have a system and it's called throw everything on the floor and then pick it all up one day a week.
Right.
Lay it nicely on the
And then the toothpaste system. I haven't heard you just squeeze it.
Well, but I don't
this thing on top. And then you're trying to get the more toothpaste out. Jammed in there.
Yeah. I will say I don't do that anymore. I think I've shown you and I'll show you again. I've been converted to a different way of toothpasting.
We still have two tubes though.
We do because we have separate sinks, which is also a real marriage saver. Yeah. Like have your own sink if you can. I mean, sometimes you can't because you're in an apartment or something.
It took us 12 years
to get it. That's true. Anyway.
Sorry.
First year, I felt like it was all in all, it was excellent. It was delightful and full. You know, we were just so, it's just so awesome to be done dating. And, it's just a blessing to not say goodnight anymore and to just wake up together and go to bed together. And the sex helps too. But, you know, there's just so many things about that first year that are so delightful when you've been anticipating. And I felt like a lot of it was just better than I expected. You know, it was just like, no, we really do enjoy each other. This is lovely.
Yeah.
But then, there were hardships of life. And I was pregnant within the first 2 weeks. So, you know, then I was really sick and we had job issues. There were a lot of like difficult circumstances that first year. But our marriage was such a blessing amidst, you know, all of that. So it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
It was a good year.
It was very,
we were super broke, so that was hard.
Yeah. Which, you know, next time is probably.
I feel that.
I'm sure. Yeah.
So when we first got married, Annie had a job at a bank and, she was able to pay all of our bills on that. So I was just writing my dissertation, you know, so the plan was get the whole thing done in a year. And then I would hopefully be a professor somewhere, you know, for the following spring. But yeah, then she got, or, you know.
Well, then I was pregnant. And then at 5 months, I had a complication and I had to go on bed rest.
Yeah.
So then the whole plan blew up, you know, about 4 months early. And
so I had to find a job, you know, and.
You were tutoring. Right.
Yeah, I was doing some odd jobs.
But it wasn't enough to replace the salary I was losing. Plus, we had to go on COBRA, you know, so we could have the baby with this doctor, you know, all that stuff. So that was a little stressful.
Anyhow, yeah, I mean, there were a lot of stressors, you know, but I think somehow for us, you know, like she was never resentful. You know, like resentment never really built up between us. We just mm-hmm. like both kind of sit there, you know, be like, what are we going to see? How are we going to do?
Thank
like,
God we have each other yeah. in our faith. Yeah. We said that a lot, you know?
Yeah. And we had, you know, community to like her family and friends. So it was never, even though the circumstances were very hard, like her being on bed rest and me not having a job, like, I mean, just saying this out loud.
Yeah.
You realize it could have been catastrophic for a relationship. Oh, but I don't know. I mean, there was never a thought in our minds like, you know, this was a mistake.
This was a mistake.
I mean, our house was really small. I mean, it was, we didn't have a dishwasher when we first got married.
Oh, that's true. That could break a marriage, but yeah. It didn't break us.
dishes.
Yeah. He did. That's
he beat the dishwasher.
Yeah.
I love it.
Anyhow.
Oh my gosh. Do you think that was because of your temperaments or was it like a conscious effort? Like, we're not going to let this tear us apart. We're, mm-hmm. you know, we're not going to let resentment build up. Like, never. Was it something you had to work at or was it kind of natural for you guys?
That is such a good question. I actually wonder about this often with our marriage because we do have what appears to be a very easy time. Like, you know, I have friends, obviously we've been married more than 20 years. So I have friends who, you know, talk about like the fights they have with their spouses. And I just can't relate on any level. Like we've never had a screaming match. We've never, I've never thrown anything in his head. You know, I do sometimes wonder, is it more temperament or is it more, will, you know, just willing to respect one another in such a way that these things don't come up. And I really think it's just a combination. I mean,
yeah, I mean, at first, I mean, what we did argue and right. like, we disagreed about stuff. I mean, especially in those first few years. That,
yeah. But we would never like scream at each other or.
No, I mean, but you know, there were times I remember where I just needed to.
Where we would just stop talking.
That's yeah, like true. I just needed to process something. I'm very analytical in my temperament. So, yeah. But she, I mean, to Annie's credit, mm-hmm. I mean, she always wants to talk things out in the moment, right? And that's like the opposite of how I process things.
Right. So we did have to learn that. I mean, there definitely, and as far as the resentment piece, I think that was very conscious. Like, we're in this together and all these mm-hmm. things that life is throwing us or the Lord is asking us to walk through where it's going to be for the better of our marriage, not the worse. So, you know, I think we were very consciously selfless whenever possible of like, and there were like even figuring that out about one another yeah. that I tend to want to discuss it in the moment and know what I feel and what I think and Adam needs time. And I had to learn to just say, okay, take that time. I'm not taking it personally. And we're going to come back to this. And so these are the things I feel like we need to figure out. You take the time you need and respect that he needed the time. It wasn't anything to do with me. You know, it wasn't like a personal thing. It was just the way his mind works. And so.
I just had one other thought about all this. So the other thing going on in that first year that we kind of forget, I think, the significance of it was that Alexander, you were pregnant with Alexander.
Yeah.
And so that was basically the honeymoon. We came back and there was, you know, a baby on the way. So, I mean, and I you know, it's all of a sudden trying to be in a new way is just tonight as we're talking about it. But it's like there was already all this momentum going towards our family. You know, like this is like we're having a baby together, you know, we loved each other and all that, but it was like there was never a question of like, well, you know, I mean, maybe we just need to stay apart for, I mean, there's nothing ever like that. Like there were hardships, but there was a baby on the way.
And we had a 6-year-old.
We had a 6-year-old already or seven. Yeah.
So
it was like, and even that, I think a lot of people would probably say it's hard to have a baby their first year. I don't know. I mean, you could chime in on that, but it's, yeah. but it's also a yeah. blessing, right? Like, yeah. I mean, for your relationship, yeah. it's totally just solidifies your, you know, your relationship as husband and wife, and then cause you're becoming a mother and father together. You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Maybe that, really. Yeah, maybe that had more to do with it than.
Well, no, I mean, in retrospect, I think it's better. I would have rather been, you know, poor and struggling and dealing with stressors and having a baby and having a 6-year-old and allowing that to, you know, bring us together than to be like bringing two incomes in, living really comfortably. I do think there's something about suffering, you know, it just, it's so sanctifying. And, yeah. and when you're suffering certain things together, then it really, it's like trial by fire, but it's good.
Yeah. And neither of us, yeah. I mean, it eliminated a bunch of those questions of like, well, who's going to stay home and child. I mean, like I'm imagining there are probably a lot of dual income couples, you know, who may be listening to this, I guess, but I mean, those are real difficult questions to answer, right? Like, hey, we both have jobs and we both have career paths already. Now we're going to have a baby. You know, mm-hmm. and like work out the justice and all that would be very difficult. And resentment could easily, I think, enter into those conversations.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, we never had any money or really any jobs.
We didn't have careers either.
So we just started having a family. Like mathematically, we were probably least prepared to have a family.
Mathematically.
But no, I mean,
same here.
We
completely get it. It's so grounding though. And, something that always, it cracks me up looking back. So Matthew and I went on our honeymoon about a month after our wedding because I had to finish school. So we got back from our wedding. I took my finals. We went on our honeymoon it was so fun. But one night he just like turns to me and he's like, do you feel like something's missing? Like, should we have a baby?
That's nice.
It turns out I was already pregnant. I didn't know it. It's so funny because we probably weren't financially, you know, ready, quote unquote, but nobody ever is. And
not really.
She's just the greatest blessing, like
of course
in the world. So yeah, so I'm totally with you, like struggling together, maybe experiencing some unexpected things is like, yeah, sanctifying and so, so good for your relationship early on. So kind of moving, I guess, more in that direction, what would you say is like one of the most difficult things you guys have had to work through in your marriage so far?
Well, I think you're migraines.
Yeah. So I have really chronic debilitating migraines and I've had them essentially my whole life since I was 14. So, I've been to myriad of physicians and specialists and, or whatever, every kind of doctor. And, when I started having kids, something got worse. I mean, even through college, like one of the reasons I didn't go to college till I was 24 is because I could be down for 5 days at a time with a migraine. And so you're missing class. And, you know, there were a lot of factors. So I had amazing professors who were super supportive. And when I missed class, they didn't dock me and let me make up the work and all that. Anyway, so it wasn't a new problem, but it did seem to be exacerbated by pregnancy and postpartum in particular. And so after my first baby, you know, it wasn't great, but we were kind of, you know, we're muddling through. I guess after Al's, it wasn't all that bad. It was like your typical 2 or 3 days a week. After our second, so 16 months later, we had another baby. And when he was about 4 months old, I ended up with this completely intractable migraine that just laid me out. And I was in bed for 15 months. So, you know, we had a brand new baby. I mean, a 4-month-old baby. and a 20-month-old baby. And Adam was working in like mortgages and.
By that time I was teaching.
Oh, that's true. By that time. So yeah, he was teaching. Anyway, that was tremendously difficult because I was in and out of the hospital. I'd be in the hospital for, I guess the longest stretch was like 11 days. My mother lived about an hour and a half away, 2 hours away. Eventually she just took the boys to live with her because Adam, well, I went eventually, I didn't go at first. So it was horrible. It was so hard. And, you know, I had to like wean immediately, like, cause I got hospitalized and they were like, you can't breastfeed on all this medication. So that was immediate. And then, you know, first we just thought it'll just be while I'm in the hospital. But then when I got out of the hospital, they hadn't been able to break the migraine. And so I was essentially just half comatose on medication to keep me from writhing in pain. It was
keep her out of the emergency
room. And to keep me out of the emergency room because I just would just go back. And so poor Adam, it was so hard.
It was really hard.
So then we didn't have the boys. Then eventually I just couldn't handle being away from the boys. So then I moved down with my mom and Adam would come on the weekends and that was worse. I was like, I can't.
That's terrible. Yeah.
And that actually was when I realized, I mean, we've always had this kind of motto that our marriage comes before our kids. And we knew we wanted to prioritize this relationship. And that, of course, that outpouring is what supports your family. And not to mean that we would ever ignore the children, but, you know, the first priority is our marriage. And that experience really did, for me, solidify, like, I miss my kids with an ache I could not describe. But not seeing my husband every day was just so non-negotiable. I was like, this is not working, you know. So the Lord did a lot in those circumstances. And we ended up, I ended up being able to move back and we had somebody who came every day and took care of them at the house for free so that I could, you know, be near them. But then Adam, I mean, was bearing all the weight of like, is Annie ever going to get out of bed? And, you know, we've got these two little boys. He's making no money. We've got medical bills crippling us. And
as a teacher,
yeah,
you know, was making,
well, he was making,
yeah,
he was a teacher, yeah, 18 years ago. So imagine, anyway,
oh my gosh,
yeah.
Brother, yeah.
So I will say, in those in that season, I realized that I had a bunch of like, I had not dealt with my own abandonment issues entirely. And so my father left when I was, again, when I was about 10, died about 4 years later. And I was raised by this amazing single mother. And I think I had just, I realized when I got really sick that I was just waiting for Adam to leave. Like I just kept thinking, well, this is it. You know, why on earth would he stay for this? And we were going to have this big family. And now I don't know if I'm ever getting out of bed and nobody can fix it. And people think I'm crazy. And, you know, it was just like all the factors. And then you could tell your part of like,
oh, well,
I never said that to him. I never said I thought he was going to leave, but I vividly remember lying in bed thinking, well, this is it. My mom's going to have to move in, you know, because he's going to leave and I can't blame him, which is so stupid because knowing Adam, he never would. Like,
yeah.
And I remember that. You're being like, who, look at who you're married to. Like, you did not marry your father. Yeah. But I also just felt, it just felt so impossible that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I mean, on my end, it was, you know, I remember it started on a Super Bowl Sunday.
It was Super Bowl Sunday.
We were watching the Super Bowl at her brother's house. And yeah, I could tell she was getting migraine. And I was like, oh, well,
we should go.
So we got the two babies or the two kids and went home. And usually her migraines, a bad one lasts 3 days, maybe four days. And then she would like get up and kind of be in the post-migraine fog, you know, for a day. But I just kept waiting for that to happen. And then it was a week. And then we went to the hospital. And then it was 2 weeks and 3 weeks.
We went to the hospital again.
And it just, you know, so then it's like, oh my gosh, do we, I guess, are there specialists in this? And so we get on the waiting list, specialist 6 months, you know, and it's just, there was no solution, and it was just so disheartening because I couldn't do anything other than take care of the boys, you know. And they would go either with my mother-in-law or some friends of ours for the day. I would go teach, come home, or pick them up, come home, dinner, bath, and bed, and like every day, Saturdays, Sundays.
Wow. Yeah, he was just single batting it big time.
And there was the hardest part was actually just the like kind of infinite horizon of the whole thing. Like it, and she was just laying in bed, and there was no end. Like it was, it just felt like groundhog in a sense or something. Yeah. Just like it was really hard. And I mean, I was praying novenas, going to mass, I mean just everything I could possibly do. And
oh yeah, I had like anointing of the sick a half a dozen times. And
just, oh my gosh, wow.
Water basically. Yeah. It was like the whole community. I mean everybody was
It's relics, all around the world. It was really beautiful. But it was just really
endless.
It was endless, and it was really, it was very difficult. And like she said, a lot of people started to think that maybe she was faking her migraines because there was no visible sign. You know, it's like she had this. Anyhow, there's just all kinds of a lot of our friends left.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really terrible. And anyhow, so I told this to Annie a few years ago, but I just remember, one day I was doing the dishes. This is like,
6-7 months in, probably.
Or more. It's more like 11 or 12 months in, and I was just so frustrated. It's like I was exhausted, and I finally got the boys to bed, and like Annie was already in bed, obviously, and I like watching the kitchen. It was just
a mess.
You know, I was like, oh, our stupid little tiny kitchen in our tiny house. And can't get any, so I just had this whole moment, this whole
resentment,
interior moment of anger, and so I'm doing the dishes and we don't even have real dishwasher and like fine. And and so I did, I like kind of pled to the Lord. I was just like, what am I supposed to do? Like, this is just
too much,
I was like, there's nothing, I was just so angry. And then clear as day, it's almost like he was standing right beside me. He goes, well, you can leave. And, I was just like frozen.
Whoa. Thinking,
right? I know, it still gives me a chill every time.
I just got a chill. Oh my gosh. That's wild. Like,
well, hold on.
I'm not going to leave. Like, I was kind of hoping that he would take care of everything, right? And so when I got that message, I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm never gonna leave. Like, that's not at all what was on my mind. And so I just said, I'm gonna finish the dishes and I'll just, trust that this is all gonna work out somehow, And anyhow, but that was extremely like sobering. And but after that, I don't know, I guess it was 4 or 5 months, she started to come out of it. We did lose a pregnancy, I think.
We lost a baby. Yeah, well, that was the other thing, is we wanted a large family. And, when the boys came 16 months apart, that was a little like, okay, well, that's pretty fast, but it was fine. And then I got so sick. So then there was, that whole, a whole year where I just thought, I don't know if I'm ever going to have another baby. And that made me really sad. And, of course, we were being super careful to not get pregnant. We did have sex that year. People probably think they must not have, but I still was like, the least I can do is make sure this man has sex sometime. This poor man. but we were not expecting to, and I did. And something about that pregnancy triggered a relief. And so with the hormones that came with that baby, I started coming out of it, and then we thought, oh, praise God, it's the baby. And then I lost the baby, which isn't a surprise because I was on so many medications and narcotics and all kinds of things, and weaning off of those, trying to get, back to normal. And I think my system was just so stressed. So we lost that baby. But then I didn't end up back in bed. Like, then I ended up back to kind of the older way, which was, migraine attacks regularly, but not intractably like that. And you know, it really shifted our perspective, I think, on family too, because, you know, we knew we wanted a large family, but then when all of a sudden you feel like, oh my goodness, what if we just have three kids? We were always very open after that of just like the Lord's going to do what he's going to do. And we did have six kids in 8 years, even with that year in the hospital.
Look at you guys. You're amazing.
So, it all, you know, but it's funny, like when you were saying, you know, we're not ready, we don't have the money. That's one thing I was always so grateful for with Adam, is that money was never a reason in his mind for us to abstain or to avoid having a baby. And it wasn't just because he didn't want to abstain. Like, it was genuinely just like, well, no, you know, like his dad has a saying, I guess it's a Spanish or Russian, or every baby comes with a loaf of bread under their arm.
Oh, I like love a little that.
Russian thing or something.
Spanish proper.
Spanish. But just the idea, and that was so, that has, was so true, that the Lord just always continued to provide. And there wasn't an abundance necessarily, but there was always enough. And no one was hungry and no one was unclothed. And, you know, the Lord just always found a way to meet the needs. And then when we would feel like, oh my goodness, how are we going to do another baby? You know, it would come together and we would find the strength and the peace. And it wasn't, you know,
a lot of side jobs and things like that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's Adam working, and he always worked so hard so I could stay home, because between my health, and once you have more than like three kids, it doesn't make, you can't pay for help anyway.
It doesn't make any sense, you know? It doesn't mess it up.
Right. So he did work a lot of side jobs and night jobs and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was definitely a long answer to the hardest time.
Oh my gosh, but really helpful though. Cause I mean, I had no idea. And also, I think a lot of people deal with migraines or like issues that you can't necessarily see, and it's really taxing and difficult. And I think that that's so beautiful that, I mean, the Lord literally spoke to you and brought you through that time. That is
the way I was expecting it to go. That's how I know it was him, not me.
Because that's how your mind was saying at all, right?
Yeah,
and so, you know, there have been, I continue to struggle with them, and I've had other long bouts, 8 months, 9 months, where it was similar. But it was kind of like, especially Adam, he just kind of gets right back into, okay, I'm doing all the things, and then I don't have to. And now that our children aren't little, well, and now that I can't have any more children, I have a few more options available to me as far as treatment and medication. And we found like a good balance. But I mean, last week I was down 4 days. So it's still more than we want. But
yeah.
Just anyway. Learning how to work with it, live with it.
Yeah.
That is so tough. But I'm like, I mean, you're such a blessing to each other. Like, when you're down, Adam's got you, and I'm sure vice versa in so many ways. So that's really, really cool. So one thing I did want to ask you guys, I know we're kind of going long, but you have so much awesome stuff to say. I was wondering why or how you guys knew that you wanted to start doing pre-Cana. And, you know, what kind of sparked that for you guys?
Well, we did like an engaged encounter as part of our marriage prep. And it was actually a pretty frustrating weekend because we were the only couple not cohabitating.
Oh, yeah.
And
maybe one other.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't admit. Yeah.
And
this was in the Diocese of Fort Worth.
We were in Fort Worth. And anyway, but there were couples, like three or four couples that were there, you know, giving talks and presenting
sponsor couples.
Yeah. So it wasn't quite like what we do, like what we did with y'all, but it's similar in that they were kind of giving their story. And then they were, they broke it down similar to the focus, like what we do with couples now, where it's like, okay, these are the things you need to be sure you're talking about money and about family of origin. And there was one couple in particular, and I wish I could remember their names. I don't, but they just really struck us as inspiring and helpful. We spent some time just talking to them over one of the meals. And I don't know, I remember there thinking like, we could do that. We should do that. Mm-hmm. And anyway, but you, so you have to be married 5 years to start. And so once we got to 5 years, I guess I just asked you, do you think you'd be willing, or should we look into it? And
well, yeah. And then the other consideration was the tithing piece. So,
yeah,
you know, we were first married and we always wanted to tithe to the church. And, but, you know, it's like after that year, it's like, well, you know, I mean, I'm not going to brag, but I did make hundreds and hundreds of dollars that year. So it was difficult.
Well, so yeah, we would tithe like $5 here, $20 there.
And we tried, but it was very, you know, like it didn't anyhow. But then I think it was your spiritual director that said, money isn't the only way you can tithe. You can also tithe of your time. And, you know, that was, since we didn't have any money, that was the obvious place for us to do it. It was still, you know, it was still a cost something.
It is. I mean, it is a tithe. I mean, it is, you know, the scheduling and the time and all those things. And anyway, so I knew the campus minister at UD very well, because she had been there when I converted and we'd stayed in touch and still had dinner and stuff. And so I just asked her, could we prepare couples from UD? Because I did think, I was a little nervous about just preparing like the broader culture of couples that come to a Catholic church and say they want to get married. And of course we love UD. And at that time UD was our church, our parish. I mean, it's not a parish, but it was where we went to church. And so it just was like a natural fit. So yeah, so we did the training and then yeah, we're going on year 16 now.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
And then it's so funny. Yeah. There's a group of couples in the area who we prepare for UD, and the new deacon, who's so wonderful, has taken over that marriage and family piece. And he's gotten us together a couple times just to visit and get to know each other. And one of the couples that's now preparing couples is a couple we prepared 10 years ago.
Yeah. That is so cool. So, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys, you prepared them so well.
Yeah. I guess so. That's yeah. Awesome. Well, the Lord did it, but yeah, no, it is. They're so funny. Right. They're always like, well, we're not Annie. Yeah. But you know,
I mean, you guys are pretty great. You were like the perfect couple to have. Like I was not expecting to get much out of marriage prep because so many people had told me, you know, our marriage prep is not that great. It's so bland. It doesn't go very deep. But like, I really appreciated how you guys were always so genuine and I don't know, just really practical, honest. That helped us so much. So,
thank you for
your ministry. It's really like, it's really helping the church, especially UD. I mean, it's a great community already. But
it is. Yeah, it is.
Really special. So one last thing I want to ask you guys before we close out is, what would be your number one advice for couples who are just starting out and just kind of where I am, like either newly engaged, seriously dating, or newly married?
Mm-hmm. Hard. Well, I thought of two things.
I thought of one thing. Yeah.
Okay. So one thing I thought of was don't keep score. Don't keep a checklist. Don't compare duties and who's doing what. And, you know, that just can turn into resentment so quickly. And, particularly for women, I think, and especially if you're staying home with kids, it's very easy to start to feel like you're doing all the things and it's thankless and it's endless. And, you know, that's just, I think that's just what the devil wants, is to get us all focused on ourselves. So, when we're keeping score, what it means is we're just thinking about what we're doing. But when we wake up and think, okay, I am going to serve this man and love this family to the best of my ability and meet his needs first, and he's doing that for me, then both our needs are met, and there isn't, it's not all muddled up with selfishness. And then the other thing is to just prioritize your marriage over your children. So keep spending time, like keep dating each other, keep spending time, make time for your sex life. Don't make the excuse like, well, now we have kids and so we can't have sex anymore, you know? And I mean, I talk about that a lot, you know, you have me from marriage pro, because I just think that the world sends this terribly destructive message that, you know, once you get married, you stop having sex, or sex is bad, or whatever. And that women in particular, you know, will just lose interest, and that's that. And I think like that's how you stop hearing each other. That's how you stop communicating, when you stop being willing to come together. And it doesn't mean, you know, I totally fully understand that through babies and postpartum and all the things, like we're made very differently and we aren't going to want to as often, and it's not the same, but it's just so essential for, because it's such a symbol of prioritizing one another. Like this is important. And, and just knowing that, like my, our kids know that our relationship is more important to each of us than they are. In the sense that they know they don't run the show, you know?
Yeah.
But they also know that they are the most important thing to us collectively, right? In the sense that our family, this era, this home that we're creating is the most important thing. It's more important than sports. It's more important than school activities. This dinner table, this family is the most important thing. And I think that works because they know we love each other so much. And there's no question of that in their mind. You know, they're not, like, it would never enter their mind that this would ever end.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. But what were you going to say?
Well, mine was actually very simple. I was just going to say to make sure you still kiss each other a lot.
Yeah.
So key, so important.
That is a good point.
I mean there's lots of other things you can do, you know, but you just I guess if you remember that the children, I mean, we know this theologically, right? The children are an emanation of your marriage bond, you know. When the marriage bond suffers, I think parents tend to become like focused on their children. And, but you know, if you focus on each other, then that your children feel more secure. And I think it's just a happier household for everybody when the husband and wife are.
Yeah. So, and again, it's obviously
everything she just
but
said,
it's not, so. It's not neglect. You're not like, oh, I want to talk to you. I'm talking to your dad, but just, they know. So for example, our sweet oldest, you know, Rihanna, who's now married with children, because she was so much older than the other six, we made her go to bed like too early.
8:30. No, she went to her room.
She had to go to her room at 9:00, even when she was in high school, because we were exhausted. We had all these little people. And once the kids went to bed, I mean, she had a good 2 hours of our time because the kids went to bed early. But then we were like, we have got to have time together. You can't sit out here with us till 10:00, because then we'll fall asleep and we won't be able to have any kind of conversation, you know? And I've asked her since, was that frustrating?
She's 28 now.
She's 28. And she said, no. She said, well, sometimes it was annoying. She said, but I loved that you guys wanted to be together and that, you know, you wanted, and then she's doing the same thing with her girls where she's like, no, this is time with me and daddy, and you aren't going to be here for that. you know, as opposed to, yeah, just that tendency to be like, oh, well, it's 11 o'clock and the kids are still up. I guess we're not going to talk. Like, no, it doesn't have to be that way. anyway, so I do feel like one of the most beautiful, just most rewarding things is to see our daughter, because I do think of her as mine since, you know, I've been her mom for so long. I know I didn't make her, but to see her embrace the vocation of motherhood and the vocation of marriage and to do it with such joy and surrender to the Lord, given all the crummy hands she was dealt and some of the things that she had to deal with. And she has said to us multiple times, it's because of this. It's because of the security and the safety and the love that was shown to her through our marriage that made her believe marriage was possible and was good and was something she wanted. And I just think it's so beautiful how redemptive that could be. Because, you know, that wasn't my experience. I didn't have an example. And yet the Lord's gifted me with this amazing man and this amazing marriage. And she could have gone the other way, right? She could have decided that, like, the path her mom took, which hasn't been good, you know, would be the better way to go. But there was something about the example of really just Christ-like love within the domestic church that's so healing and then allows her to, you know, step into that healing and then break that generational pattern. And just so anyway, I just think it's such a beautiful gift, the gift of marriage.
Yeah. And the domestic. My gosh. That's amazing. Yeah. So true. And just beautiful. I love that. And I'm so happy that she's having babies and yes. You guys are grandparents. That's amazing.
I know. And they live like 4 minutes away. So it's really
That's the dream. Oh my gosh. That's so great.
It really is. Yeah. I just spent the morning with my 3-year-old granddaughter today. It was magical. It's magical. Yeah.
That is so cool. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you guys so much for sharing all of that. And I really appreciate it. I've heard some of it before, but it was so nice to dive in deeper. Wow. So thank you.
You're so welcome.
And then if you guys wouldn't mind leading us in the prayer to Mary, Mother of Fairest Love, that would be awesome.
All right. Just sorry, in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Mary, Mother of Fairest Love, you are the Mother of Jesus and our Mother. Intercede for us with your Son, as you did at the wedding at Cana. Pray for us, Fairest Mother, to strengthen and bless our families. Help those called to marriage to find their spouses and teach them to love with a pure and selfless love. Accompany parents in the upbringing and education of their children with unconditional love. Help those who have answered the Father's call to the consecrated life or to apostolic celibacy to be generous and faithful to their vocations. Bring peace, unity, and joy to the homes of families that are broken or burdened. Accompany with warmth of your presence those who are alone. You are the Mater Pulchrae Delectionis, the Mother of beautiful love. Help us to love as Jesus loves, so we may show each other love full of mercy and forgiveness. May all our love and affections be always faithful, pure, and chaste. Dear Mother, be our refuge in our material and spiritual needs, and intercede especially here for our intentions. Yeah, for our marriage and
marriage of those listening.
Yeah. May we grow in love and come to know true peace and joy now and in the life to come in heaven. Amen.
As always, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of After Cana. If you enjoyed listening, share it with a friend, subscribe, and leave a review, or visit us at fairestloveshrine.org.